Welcome to Spot Diagnosis, Vignettes in Dermatology, short segments on how to manage commonly encountered skin problems. My name is Dr. Lakshmi Iyengar, and I'm a GP Registrar, Research and Education Fellow at the Skin Health Institute, Centre of Skin Excellence located in Melbourne, Australia.
And I'm Dr. Alvin Chong, Specialist Dermatologist at Skin Health Institute and St. Vincent's Hospital, Melbourne, Adjunct Associate Professor at the University of Melbourne. We are your co-hosts. Lakshmi, what do we have in store today?
I begin today by acknowledging the Wurundjeri people of the Eastern Kulin Nation, traditional custodians of the land on which we record this podcast, and pay my respects to their elders past and present. I extend that respect to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples listening today. Today, I would like to discuss two common skin conditions, periorificial dermatitis and seborrheic dermatitis. Let's start with periorificial dermatitis, a presentation that particularly rose to prominence with mask wearing during the COVID-19 pandemic. I will kick things off with a case presentation. I saw a 25-year-old woman who presented with about 6 months of gradual worsening of a facial rash. This started around her eyes. She went to a pharmacy and brought an over-the-counter 1% hydrocortisone cream. When she started using this, the rash cleared within a week. However, it reoccurred when she stopped using it. She restarted and once again the rash cleared, only to recur when she stopped. So this cycle of recurrence kept going for a few weeks until the hydrocortisone cream no longer worked. Her rash was getting worse and extending down to involve the skin around her nose and mouth. In desperation, she started using her boyfriend's betamethasone cream, which was prescribed for his eczema. This helped, but once again, the rash restarted on cessation with increasing severity until the betamethasone no longer worked. She now has a rash all over her face. She works in retail and has been using increasing amounts of makeup to hide her rash. She is on the oral contraceptive pill and nothing else, and she has come to see me increasingly desperate.
Well, we might find it interesting, but you know, patients often use their relatives' topical treatments. It is no surprise that she has gone and used her boyfriend's potent topical steroid on her face. Now, Lakshmi, does she have any symptoms?
Her rash was not itchy, but occasionally it would sting.
And what did you see on examination?
She had a fairly monomorphic papular rash around her mouth, nose and eyes bilaterally.
Well, Lakshmi, I think you have described a classical case of periorificial dermatitis. So let's go through a few salient features in this case. Firstly, periorificial dermatitis is much commoner in young women, and the initial rash may be very nonspecific. For example, a few dots around the eyes, around the nose, on the cheeks. But when topical steroids are added to the mix, then things really start to accelerate. The story of a rash initially improving and then worsening on cessation of a topical steroid is absolutely classical. It is what I call the heroin habit of the skin. So if you put steroid on a rash on the face, it initially helps it. But when you stop it, the skin craves it and you get an explosive rash, sometimes in response to the treatment. What is periorificial dermatitis? This is a broad term for an inflammatory cutaneous eruption. So it's not an infection, it is an inflammatory reaction. And it encompasses orifices. If the area around the eye is affected, you call it periocular dermatitis. If the area around the mouth is affected, it's perioral dermatitis. If the area around the nose is affected, it's perinasal dermatitis. So it's easier to just call it periorificial dermatitis to describe all of these.
Can you please tell us a bit about what causes periorificial dermatitis?
Yes, periorificial dermatitis is common and one of these conditions where we don't actually know too much about what triggers it. Here are some associations. We have found associations with cosmetic use, particularly layered cosmesis. Someone just puts a layer of moisturizer followed by a layer of foundation and a layer of concealer and then a powder on top. The more layers, the higher the likelihood that it comes on. So the occlusion is probably something to do with it. If you use topical steroids, if you use a mild topical steroid, it's less likely. But if you use a potent topical steroid, for example, a fluorinated topical steroid, it can bring it up, particularly when you stop. It tends to be associated sometimes with menses around perimenstrual flares. And it tends to be most common in young to middle-aged women. Now, we were talking earlier about it being well-known in COVID because of mask wearing. When you wear a mask, you actually occlude the skin and it changes the microflora. We found that there were many, many cases of mask-induced periorificial dermatitis, particularly during the time where mask wearing was mandatory. In fact, I myself had a case of perioral dermatitis about a year ago.
Alvin, what are some clinical features of periorificial dermatitis?
The classical feature is a fine papular erythematous eruption that occurs around the orifices, so around the eyes, around the nose and mouth. Now, it can be either of these or all of them or two areas. Around the mouth, sometimes there is a zone of sparing. The rash is usually not itchy, but it can be sensitive to touch and quite easily irritated, particularly if you're washing your face.
What are some of the differential diagnoses for periorificial dermatitis?
Differential diagnosis can be quite broad. You can have dermatitis affecting the face, so like atopic dermatitis or irritant or allergic contact dermatitis, but that tends to be characterized by itch, while periorificial dermatitis is usually not itchy. Rosacea. Rosacea is characterized by background flushing, erythema, and sometimes inflammatory papules, whilst in periorificial dermatitis, flushing is usually absent. You can get seborrheic dermatitis, and we'll talk a little bit more about that later. Seborrheic dermatitis tends to be a lot scalier. And then there's acne, but acne tends to occur in younger patients, and there's the presence of comedones, which is not present in periorificial dermatitis.
Alvin, could you please tell me your approach to managing periorificial dermatitis?
Generally, you avoid the things that bring it on. The triggers and irritants, for example, multi-layered makeup, occlusive factors, just try to avoid that as much as possible. Look for topical steroid use. And if you see it, for example, in this case, you have to stop the topical steroid. Now, it is quite tricky because when you stop a topical steroid, there's going to be a rebound flare of the periorificial dermatitis, and you have to guide the patient through the flare without them going back on the topical steroid. I would recommend bland emollients and soap-free wash. If we have a patient who just has some periorificial dermatitis, hasn't been using any topical steroid, and it is very mild, you can use a topical treatment that doesn't contain steroid. In this case, I would recommend a calcineurin inhibitor, such as pimecrolimus cream, also known as Elidel. But if you actually have a patient who has been using topical steroid, you have to stop the topical steroid. There will be a flare. And then my favorite and most important treatment would be a course of oral antibiotics. Now, you might think, why are you using oral antibiotics for something that's not infective? Because oral antibiotics can also have an anti-inflammatory action in addition to its antimicrobial action. We don't need antimicrobial doses. Rather, you just need a small dose for a long period of time. My favorite would be oral doxycycline, 100 milligrams a day for 4 to 6 weeks until the rash flattens, and then add one more week. And often it takes a few weeks for the rash to completely flatten. If doxycycline is contraindicated, then consider oral erythromycin, 250 milligrams, twice daily, again for a few weeks. For severe refractory cases, we sometimes consider oral isotretinoin, but just keep in mind that sometimes the rash can recur, and it is very, very important to keep going for a few weeks. Patients often lose patience after 1 to 2 weeks, and they say, oh, the antibiotic's not working. This is one of those conditions which can take a number of weeks to settle.
Thanks for telling us all about periorificial dermatitis.
Ever wondered what the Skin Health Institute does? At the Skin Health Institute based in Melbourne, we aim to improve skin health for all our patients, and the research we conduct shapes clinical treatment and practice. We provide over 30,000 patient treatments each year and also deliver exceptional education programs for dermatologists, registrars and healthcare workers. We provide specialist training for visiting international medical graduates, workshops to upskill GPs and medical students, and public education programs aimed at improving skin health in the community. The Institute also conducts clinical trials and research projects that are published and presented internationally. We make substantial contributions to the worldwide clinical care and management of skin diseases, skin cancer, and melanoma, and are recognized globally for our medical research. We have multiple clinics for GPs to directly refer patients to. GPs can complete our online referral form available on our website at skinhealthinstitute.org.au/patient-referrals or email referrals to referrals@skinhealthinstitute.org.au.
So now let's move on to our second topic for today, seborrheic dermatitis in adults, which is different from seborrheic dermatitis in infants.
So Lakshmi, have you seen a case of adult seborrheic dermatitis?
Yes, I've recently seen a 45-year-old man who presents with years of a recurrent scaly rash on his face, eyebrows, chest, and scalp. It can get worse if he's stressed. It's not itchy, but scaly. He has been using bland emollients to reduce scale, and they have been slightly helpful. On examination, he has an erythematous scaly rash on his nasolabial folds, eyebrows, and sideburns. The scale is yellow-white, and his complexion is slightly greasy. He also has a central area of erythema and scaling on his central chest. There is flaking in his scalp with mild erythema.
Well, Lakshmi, you've just described a fairly classical case of adult seborrheic dermatitis. Seborrheic dermatitis is actually a skin disease where you have two components. The first component is that you have sebaceous gland-rich skin, which then produces a lot of oil, and that skin is colonized by a commensal called Melanesia furfa. This cleaves fatty acid within the sebum. And then these kind of products are thought to result in inflammation of the skin. So you have the oil and you have the yeast and then you have the inflammation. So you have that kind of combination of these three things that gives you that oily, scaly rash, often on the face, but it can be in the scalp and it can be on the chest and occasionally the upper back. In more severely affected patients, there might be concurrent blepharitis of the eyelid margins.
Is it generally a clinical diagnosis or are biopsies required?
This is a clinical diagnosis because the characteristics are fairly classical. There is actually a broad range of differential diagnoses in periorificial dermatitis, the first of which is actually psoriasis. Now, psoriasis, as you may know, is an inflammatory condition of the skin which can affect mainly the scalp. And occasionally, if you have a very, very severe case of seborrheic dermatitis with thick scale, sometimes they can kind of blend into psoriasis. The other differential diagnoses include rosacea. Rosacea is more characterized by flushing and inflammatory papules rather than red scaly areas. You can get seborrheic dermatitis and rosacea together. We call that an overlap condition called SIBO rosacea. And some patients have atopic dermatitis, where the skin is itchy. And finally, periorificial dermatitis, which we were talking about some time ago. And there, the condition tends to be mainly papular rather than scaly.
Are there any associations of seborrheic dermatitis?
Well, there are a few conditions where seborrheic dermatitis tends to worsen. And nobody really knows the reason for that. The first of which are neurological diseases, such as Parkinson's disease, sometimes dementia. If the patients are on immunosuppression, then sometimes the seborrheic dermatitis can worsen.
Alvin, can we discuss your approach to managing seborrheic dermatitis?
Yes. The general principles are to reduce the oiliness, reduce the yeast, and then to reduce the inflammation. To reduce the oiliness, I would recommend a regular shampoo, a regular face wash with a soap-free wash because you don't want to dry the skin out too much. And make sure that you use a flannel or cloth to rub the areas where there is scale to get rid of the scale. And then you replace the oil with a regular emollient. Then to reduce the yeast, I would recommend an antifungal shampoo or anti-yeast shampoo, such as ketoconazole shampoo, trade name 1% Nizoral, and this can be used as a face wash, shampoo, and body wash. If there is excessive scale present, for example, on the scalp, then you can use a keratolytic shampoo, like salicylic acid shampoo, or salicylic acid in a cream, like 5% salicylic acid in aqueous cream. And then finally, how do you reduce the inflammation? And you have a couple of options here. You can actually have a combination of a mild topical steroid and an azole cream. For example, 1% hydrocortisone cream and 1% clotrimazole cream, called hydrazole cream. And that can actually reduce the inflammation. Just keep in mind, though, that it is a corticosteroid and prolonged use may lead to periorificial dermatitis. The other option is to use a topical calcineurin inhibitor, such as pimecrolimus cream or Elidel, for the face to reduce associated inflammation. For the scalp, you can use a topical steroid, such as mometasone furoate lotion. Adult seborrheic dermatitis is chronic, so it tends to come and go. So you might notice that whilst you can produce an improvement over a period of time, you'll recur again and just have to treat it again. By the way, seborrheic dermatitis tends to improve almost miraculously when you go on holidays. Happens all the time.
And why is that?
You know, I've got no idea. The same way that certain rashes tend to get worse with stress, like seborrheic dermatitis and psoriasis will worsen with stress and lack of sleep. Okay, so this is one of these conditions where, well, the scientific reason is probably because some kind of neuropeptide is leading to increased inflammation. But right now, I don't have any data. I just know clinically this is what happens. It would be great if you can prescribe holidays and breaks, you know, in the tropics for our patients with seborrheic dermatitis. The problem is when they come back to their home cities and start work again, it's probably going to recur.
That concludes our short clinical vignette on periorificial dermatitis and adult seborrheic dermatitis. I hope you enjoyed it and gained some further insights. I would like to also thank the education team at the Skin Health Institute and Balloon Tree Productions. Remember, these podcasts are not meant to replace medical advice. If you have a skin condition that requires attention, we strongly encourage you to see your medical practitioner.
For listeners who want more information on this subject, a transcript of this episode and links to other resources can be found on our website, spotdiagnosis.org.au. Please share Spot Diagnosis with your friends and colleagues, rate and review us, and let us know what you think. We'd really appreciate your feedback and suggestions. Also, just to remind you, Spot Diagnosis Clinical Vignettes is eligible for RACGP and Akram CPD points. Thank you for listening.
The Skin Health Institute would like to thank our exclusive institute partner, Melbourne Pathology, for their support of the Spot Diagnosis podcast, and thank you to AbbVie for sponsoring this episode.